You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus, on edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Hello there, I'm Chris Difford and welcome to the podcast I never thought it would happen, made in collaboration with the wonderful charity Help Musicians. Well, I never thought it would happen. We have a bonus episode. And I have to say, it's a fantastic encore because to join me today is a singer-songwriter and frontman of one of the UK's biggest bands. They're multi-award winning and have played Glastonbury many times, probably more times than me. But why does it rain on me, I wonder? They formed in the early 90s, put out their debut album in 1997, and it's been an amazing ride of highs and lows ever since. So please welcome Fran Healy to talk about his life in Travis.
Hey, we just met, didn't we?
You did just meet. And it's lovely to see you again. Where are you?
I'm in Manchester. Manchester.
Right. A long way from home then.
Yeah, a little bit. But I'm not really, because home is... It's weird when you're in a band, right? You kind of... I would say home is where the heart is, but it's like where your kids are. So I am a long way from home. Have you got kids?
Yeah, they don't travel on the road with me. They find it boring, so they stay at home.
How old are they?
Well, I've got four who are sort of adults and flown the nest and do their own things. Wow. And then three stepchildren, and they've kind of flown the nest, so yeah. But, you know, when I go away, it's kind of, because I've been doing it for 50 years, it's kind of just like being in the theatre now. I don't know if you feel the same way.
Yeah, I don't know what it's like. I mean, I feel as though... I thought it's an interesting thing. What do you mean by that when you say it's like the theatre?
Well, you know, it's kind of... I don't get nervous about it anymore because I just feel like... Well, I used to feel like I didn't deserve it, if you see what I mean.
You had imposter syndrome?
Kind of, yeah. But now I feel like actually I co-own this thing that's called the band.
Yeah.
And... Before I didn't, so that's a great thing to have under your belt when you walk on stage.
See, I always had that. Like, that's an interesting thing. Like, I never get nervous. I'm totally introvert, but something about the stage never bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe because there's nobody near you.
Right.
I'm a bit of a, like, I get this little pangs of social anxiety. Like, I'll go on holiday in a... I'll sit in the hotel room I'll just sit there going like, this is great. People are like, we're going out to this. And I'm like, oh, really? Oh, no, I'll just stay here.
Sounds familiar.
And I don't know, maybe it's been working class and never ever having it in my background. It takes a lot to get me to leave the hotel and adventure into new uncharted territory.
Yeah, no, I'm like that too. I'm not a good tourist, and I think my parents weren't either. They, you know, whenever we went on holiday, we just sat on the same deck chairs on the same beach year in, year out. I don't know if you had that.
We didn't go on many holidays. We did Blackpool a couple of times. I remember one memorable one when I was 7 and a really memorable one when I was 12.
Yeah.
In Blackpool. And our broth was the first one I really remember.
Of course.
When I was about 9. Anyway, yeah, it just didn't do it, you know, because that was what working class people did.
Has touring changed for you in a way that, you know, people are more respectful of well-being, you know, people take care of themselves a little bit better than they used to?
Oh, that's a good question. You're coming out with the good ones, Chris. Sort of, like, for, you know, it's horses for courses, actually, with us. Like, I wasn't a big drinker. And I started, like, having the odd drink during COVID. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, that's nice. That's a nice, like, take the edge off the day feeling. Especially when it's almost like when your life is tumultuous in any way, like emotionally, like stormy weather, you know, it's like ballast. It feels like it sort of just, it takes the rock out of your, if you've been having a hectic day.
Mm.
Which the last few years for me have been just like crazy. It's been a bit of a roller coaster, emotionally speaking.
Yeah.
So we went out in the Lash last Sunday, but it wasn't meant to be. That wasn't the plan. We went out just to do like some, what do you call it, social media content in Camden. And I was like, hey, because we all lived down there.
We moved down on
the Haringey Ladder in 1996.
Of course.
To come down to get a deal.
Yeah.
But it was peak Britpop. And so we would go to rehearsals. We were all signing on the Dole housing benefit, the John Major Music Scholarship scheme. And so we would go to the Good Mixer, the Dublin Castle, the World's End, the club underneath the World's End. I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, so I was like, why don't we do a bit of a little pub crawl thing, because we've got a song on a new album called Raise the Bar, like R-A-Z-E, the bar, about my friend's bar in New York. And it was like, that's a great idea. So we went out and, you know, it just, we got absolutely smashed, stupid drunk. And the next day I went to rehearsals, touring with the Killers just now, like we're playing in front of like 25,000 people. I'm like,
wow,
it's a big tour. You know, it's huge. And the next day, my throat was just fucked. Totally gone.
Very messy.
And stupidly, I just screamed. Like, I did this, there's a song, and I screamed like James Brown as a laugh. And then it went. My voice went. And then we were starting the tour the next day, and I'm like,
no way.
Oh, shit. So I'm not drinking at all at the moment.
No, you can't.
Exactly.
No.
But I never did. That's the thing. It's ironic because... So, in answer to your question, we sort of do, but it's horses for courses.
I understand, yeah. And I suppose being a young adult and you were kind of looking forward to being a songwriter or forming a band, who is the first kind of live act that you went to see that you thought, I want to do that?
Wow. The first one, right, so I think it's the first gig I went to. Oh, God. Right, so there's a couple. One was Owen Paul. My friend won a raffle ticket to go and see Owen Paul. Do you remember that song? You're mine, you're my favourite waste of time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He was a pop star. His brother played for Celtic and everyone, he was just a big pop star. And then we're the only boys in the audience. And it was just insane. It was like a Beatles concert screaming the whole way through. And we were just like, this is wow. But it felt electric. Then there were, we went to see, oh, what was the Pixies.
Oh, okay.
The Pixies. Uh-huh. I remember going to see the Pixies at the Barrowlands in 1989. It was like, wow. And then there was all these things are pushing you towards like, this is amazing. Like, how can they make this sound like this and play like that? And then I saw Rage Against the Machine at the Barrowlands as well. And that made me not want to do it.
Of course.
I don't know about you, Chris.
Yeah.
But, you know, like when there's certain songs that inspire you to go and do a song.
Another song.
Yeah. And other songs that are like, fuck that.
I don't want to do that.
McCartney. Yeah, and you're a... I mean, honestly, you guys are one of those bands for me that are just like, how the fuck? You can't do better than that. Like, you cannot. Honestly, you can't. You must... I should be interviewing you because there's so many questions I have. Like I just, anyway, we won't go into it because that will just take up your time. But
another time.
Yeah. But there's definitely that thing. So I've had both.
But previous to that, had you sort of had the feeling that being a songwriter was something that was going to inspire your day? I mean, when you were at school, did you pick up a pencil and write poems, or you know, was that an interest for you?
My granda, I remember my granda writing little like limerick things, and
yeah.
But drawing was always the thing. Like, I was really good at drawing and really good at art.
Oh, yeah.
That was my thing. I went to art school to do that. The singing thing was the singing part of it. I sung like when I was really, really little, like maybe 6 years old. They made me go up and sing a song for Burns Night or Burns Day in Scotland, and I won a prize for singing. And that made me think, oh, maybe I can sing. But then I didn't sing for ages because I was a teenager. And then when you join your band, I joined my first band, and nobody, and you will maybe attest to this, nobody wants to be the singer.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're boys, right? I'm not doing that. Everyone wants to be the guitarist or the drummer or, you know.
No one wants to be a drummer. Come on.
Oh, are you kidding? I want to be a drummer. Neil's always like, get off my kit. I'm like, oh, come on. Anyway, but yeah, I ended up being by default a singer because I could just hold a tune. But writing poetry, I kept a diary from the age of 12.
You did? Wow.
Until the age of 32.
Yeah, and wow. There's a book there.
So that definitely, I think writing was my secret place. But it wasn't writing poems. I liked things that rhyme because it helps you remember. It helps you remember what you were trying to say. It's just easier way of remembering things. And I remember my Uncle Bill, who's amazing and no longer with us. He would be that guy in the house who'd be like, if he's going to the shops, he's like, I'm going to the shops today. He'd just like sing, you know, I'm going to get some petrol for the car, you know, anything. And he's always like making jokes and being funny and singing. And then my own dad, who... I was kind of a bit estranged from.
Right.
Who I just remember, he's a big part of this, and I don't give him enough credit. He's no longer with us too. Bill and him were best mates at one point.
Hmm.
But there was this moment where when I was wee, I remember being in his bedroom, the curtains being closed. The bedroom is that kind of like muted, sunny. It was a sunny day, and I opened up his cupboard, and there was this weird box in his cupboard, which was a guitar case. And I was like, what's that? And he pulled it out and he unclipped these clips, 1, 2, 3, and then the bottom one, 4, and then opened up this box.
Wow.
The first thing was the smell.
The smell, yeah.
That gluey, woody.
Yeah.
And that was, for me, an absolute pivotal. I was like, oh, what the fuck is that? That's amazing. It's like, this is, you take it out and it's too big for you, but
yeah,
these instruments are like works of art. that people have like spent time on, and then they actually make a sound.
I know.
And they go on to make other bits of art. Anyway, so that to me was, yeah, where my beginnings were.
And is your imagination a safe place for you to be? For me, you know, whenever I'm feeling the woes of the world or relationship mm-hmm. issues, I always find that being in my imagination in the song, when the songwriter appears in my life, it's the greatest moment.
Mm.
The songwriter holds me and it's a place of love and safety. Do you feel that?
No.
Okay.
No, maybe I feel it with prose. I don't feel it with... I feel it after the song's written. Yeah, for me, it's like, and I don't know about you. I mean, you do, you were the lyricist, right?
Yeah.
Right. Did he do the melody or did you do the melody?
He did.
Or
he did the melody.
Oh, he went, da 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 da. He did that bit.
Yeah.
That's fucking mad. Like, that to me is like how you two converged. I'm probably distorting like crazy on this. I'm really sorry. I'm getting excited. How you two converged, it's like Taupin and Elton.
It is like that, yeah.
Right, so for me, songs are, my imagination is a place where I was always the kid staring out the window at school. All of us lot are, yeah. On our school report cards, tends to be easily distracted.
Yeah, me too.
Today they would call us ADHD or some other thing and give us some drugs and tell us to like, pay attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get on with it.
And you're like, pay attention to... I am paying attention.
It's so funny. Yeah. I do.
Do you know
it's
what I'm
lovely.
Saying? It's like, I am paying attention, but just not to you. Because what you've got to teach me is not more interesting than what's outside the window. Look at that pigeon.
That pigeon on the wall.
Yeah. It's always a pigeon.
It's always
getting
a pigeon.
Massively rebuffed by another pigeon.
Yeah. How funny is that?
So... Yeah. That's a place, I think I'm a dreamer. I think all of us writers and artists are daydreamers. That is something that they try to beat out of you.
Yeah.
I've got a line in a song called Somewhere Else that goes, we come in knowing everything and don't say a word until they teach it away.
Yeah.
And that sort of like, to me, sums up school. They beat the imagination and the sparkle out of everyone. And most people... get it beaten out of them, and we're the somehow holdouts.
Absolutely. Do you think the music industry is kind of like that?
It's
changed so much, hasn't it, since we first signed record deals?
Well, I think what happens to me is, what I've noticed is there were a lot of daydreamers in the music business, you know, like all the guys that, like Andy McDonald who signed us. Do you know Andy?
Yeah.
Andy worked as a press guy, and then started his label, Go Discs, and then, you know, got Billy Bragg and then the House Martins. And Andy's your absolute perfect example of the record executive who is himself a dreamer.
Genius guy, yeah.
And his job is to, their main job should be, as Andy said, is to lift the artist above mm-hmm. the crowd. Because artists can't do it for themselves because we're introverts or, you know, we're that's not our job. We mine, you know, we dig and they lift up the cup and or us or whatever. I think throughout the history of music, we have to be realistic here. It's the music business.
Yeah.
So it's music and then business.
Business, yeah.
And a friend of mine, oh no, I can't say this because I'll get into trouble because then they'll know who it is and then you'll probably get the sack. But tech is taking over. The whole work, the tech is now taking over.
Yeah.
I do believe, though, that it comes in waves. Different things happen. I mean, this is such a massive... You keep asking these questions that are like...
Sorry.
No, it's great. It's absolutely amazing because you're right. It is different. But have I heard A Cool for Cats since you wrote that?
No.
Ever? No, I mean, but have I heard Why Is It Always Ruining Me? No. And I'm trying to think, less and less pull my car over. That's always the sign for me.
Is when you pull the... Yeah.
When listening you're listening to the radio.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you wait till the song is finished to find out who is this.
I remember those days.
The original Shazam.
Yeah, the car.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Lady Nade. I'm a singer-songwriter, performing artist and music facilitator from Bristol, UK. And I'm proud to be one of the thousands of artists supported by Help Musicians. I began writing as a way to deal with grief at a young age. I lost my grandmother when I was 10, and she was just an amazing woman in my life. And I started writing her letters, and I thought by writing her letters, I could bring her back to life. I was just so heartbroken. I started to develop those letters into poetry. And I was in school and I was introduced to songwriting workshops. So I took my poems there and letters and thoughts, and I learned to take those experiences and make them accessible to listeners through music and song. I had no idea I had this voice. I'd sung in school with my friends, singing to Spice Girls. I do remember a fond memory that you've allowed me to access, which is singing in a car with my nan, actually singing on the way to school really loud. My nan would let me put on my Spice Girls and I would sing my lungs out on journeys to school with my nan. So that's a really lovely memory. But I never really thought I want to be a singer. I thought I want to be a Spice Girl, but I think all my friends wanted to be a Spice Girl. I certainly didn't think at that time I was going to be a singer. How I got into singing, following being at the songwriting workshops, a leaflet was presented to a friend of mine in school. It was singing workshops, and she was really keen to attend. And I really didn't feel that it was going to be for me, but she begged and begged. And I said, oh, okay. And I absolutely had an amazing time. It was called Studio 7. It was run by Kizzy Morell at the Lakota in Bristol. And I had an amazing time. I loved singing. I loved singing in a group. And I felt just so alive. And after the session, I was buzzing. And my friend said, oh, I really didn't like that. And I ended up forcing her to come with me every week. I've experienced so many career highlights. Most recently, I performed with Mike Scott and the Waterboys at the Bath Forum. Mike heard me singing at the UK Americana Awards, where he received a Lifetime Achievement Award. I was nominated for UK Artist of the Year and had previously won UK Best Song for the title track of my latest album, Willing. You can watch me performing in Series 2 of Traitors, a television drama on Netflix. I've been lucky enough to have my music played on Bob Harris, Radio 2, Keres Matthews, BBC 6, and on The Folk Show with Mark Radcliffe. Help Musicians have supported me in so many ways. They helped me financially with the assistance of my third album, Willing, and they also offered me business lessons, which provided me with insight to royalties and PRS royalties and PPL. And I wasn't actually getting the full amount of royalties for placement of my music so that I could earn more money. And they also helped me with branding and navigating the music industry, being an artist who isn't pigeonholed into one genre but eclectic, how to navigate as a multi-genre artist. They also introduced me to BAPAM, who I needed support from with a time in my life where I was suffering really badly from mental health, imposter syndrome and anxiety, and they provided therapy and support, and it was just amazing. Actually, Help Musicians became a lifeline for me. I found it really hard to navigate when I wasn't able to see people and artists and industry who look like me. I'm a mixed heritage black female, And if you can see someone who looks like you doing what you want to do, then you can like learn from them and you can reverse engineer them. So I was getting these amazing opportunities to play some really amazing festivals, but I happened to be the only black female on the bill. And then I was finding it was the same for audiences. I wasn't able to see myself reflected back. I was working with a mentor, Keith Harris, who was Stevie Wonder's mentor, and he came into the business with the same experiences, and he was able to help alleviate these feelings through conversations. And what we found was I wasn't alone. So I was just struggling with that. I was struggling to know who I was. And often with my music being eclectic, I would get reviews saying it's folk, but it's not folk enough, or it's jazz, but it's not jazz enough. And I came to understand the stereotype of black female often seen to be playing in genres of jazz and soul and blues. And I was in folk with the guitar, and that surprised me because my inspirations are Joan Armatrading and Tracy Chapman. So I was like, well, how come there's so few and far between Tracy Chapman and Joan Armatrading and then Yola? And I just started to really doubt myself, and I thought that there was an expectation that I shouldn't be trying to pursue a career in folk and Americana. And I just kind of felt so overwhelmed. And yeah, that's how I ended up with imposter syndrome. You're holding a heavy burden to show up, not just with your songs and your music, but you're representing your heritage. And I think the double glass ceiling and the barriers and the challenges as a woman already, but then a mixed heritage woman, it can be very tough. But I really have been able to, with the support of Help Musicians and English Folk Expo and Keith Harris, make positive changes. And now I am not the only black woman playing festival lineups and attending events, and that's a great show of change. I believe the UK and Americana folk scene should reflect our multicultural and diverse society. I believe all music genre should be accessible, and music education should be available to everyone. As a music maker of mixed black and white heritage, I want to be in creative spaces that are diverse and equal. I would definitely encourage anyone that is suffering from mental health to reach out to Help Musicians. Contacting Help Musicians directly is just a great way to be able to have someone hear you and support you through whatever you are going through.
Help Musicians is a charity for working musicians across the UK. To find out more about the support they offer, why they do what they do, and how to support them in creating a world where musicians can thrive, visit helpmusicians.org.uk or find them on social media today.
Jules Holland's been working with Rod Stewart, and you know, to get their record to number one, you know, they had to do a special gig to sign vinyl copies of the album. But to get the vinyl made, they had to find a factory that wasn't printing Taylor Swift albums, because they were all jammed with Taylor Swift albums. And I was just thinking, my God, that's like, is that where we are?
Look, let's not kid ourselves on. The music business has always loved selling just plastic, you know, it's like physical product, whereas a tape cassette, when the streaming services came along, that was like, that came in from way over there. We all saw it coming. The record industry didn't. And now they've caught up with it. I feel like I don't care what I hear a song on. I just want to hear a song. And I don't hear many songs that either want to stop me in my tracks and drop the guitar and say I never want to write another song again, that's too good. Maybe I don't look enough. Maybe there's just so much music now that's really hard to... It's become atomized, you know, like everyone's doing it. Maybe it's like it happened to us first. Or maybe like photographers, they must be like, what? Everyone's a photographer now? Fuck off.
Yeah.
So I think there's... I don't know if we'd get a deal now. I don't know if you'd get a deal now.
Well, that's a good question. Yeah. Interestingly enough, we have been searching for a record deal and for our new album. And we have a record deal, but we can't bring the album out until the vinyl factories have got space to print.
Right.
Because of Taylor Swift. So it's kind of like, so we've got to wait a year before we can put our album out. But, you know.
Are you serious?
We're serious, yeah. But to put new songs in the set, that's a frustrating thing too, because we're dying to upgrade the set by putting new songs in and make us more sort of more in the game, as it were. Do you feel the same? Do you chuck a lot of new stuff in the set?
We're playing a 10-song set at the moment with The Killers, and we're throwing 3 brand new songs into it.
That's great.
Which is good. And yeah, it's good. But let's talk about Taylor Swift for a second, because this is the elephant in the room. Because in one sense, an artist like Taylor Swift is keeping our industry, the money running around the industry, and allowing the industry to make a lot of money and sign new artists and blah, blah, blah. I heard the other week that I'm not sure which record company it was, are no longer going to give money for radio promotion. But they are moving that money towards tour support, which is kind of cool, and for social media content creation. So radios, who'd have thought it, right? Radios have been surpassed now by a new technology, but of course, it's just technology, right? But the Taylor Swift thing, I know someone that knows her, and he's like, she's cool. And I trust him. He's from Barnsley. And he's a really cool dude. And he's like, she's really cool. I'm like, okay. So, Taylor, why don't you, to save us all this, it's a kind of humiliating thing, right? A little bit. She's got all this money. She's got probably $2 billion. Why doesn't she buy a few record making plants and create her own? Because in a sense, Taylor Swift, all the big mega stars now, they're almost like the Walmart and the Amazon,
the giants,
and they're like the giants of your example of it is perfect, because it's like they're sucking all of the resources towards them, and it means that bands who we're all still singing your songs are not able to. So, but then again, I don't think anyone's said to her, hey, this is happening. Maybe I should write a letter to her and ask my mate to give it to her, eh?
You should, yeah, and say hi from me.
I will.
But I remember having counsel with Pete Townsend once about, you know, the chemistry of being in a band and how to deal with that, because, you know, often it can be complicated yet wonderful. And Pete said to me, you know, you've got to think of your band now as a corner shop. You know, you're selling fruit and veg from the corner shop. You're not Tesco's anymore. Once you feel very comfortable in that place, then you've got a great career. And I understand that now, and I respect that. You know, it's kind of, I don't want to be in Tesco's. I don't want to be in those big Amazon stores like those other artists are. I'm quite happy on the corner shop.
I have a slightly different take on it, because I think that's a really nice... We're the local stores. We're the local pub that are all being like dismantled to make way for the homogenized thing that's ironically trying to ape the thing that the corner shop, the charm or the magic of they're trying to do that in a sort of synthetic way. I think like there was a moment where it felt like all the bands were in a big giant shopping mall together.
Yeah.
And everyone was walking around, and the shopping mall was owned by the record industry or whatever. But now you've got even the shopping malls being surpassed by single artists. And it's like, whoa. I mean, it's kind of crazy. And it's what's the drive? What's the, is it about trying to nail themselves into history? Did someone not love you enough when you were little? What's your motivation to need? Is it winning? Is it like, did you know? I'm really motivated. I'm very competitive.
You are.
I'm not quite sure why that is, maybe.
It's a good thing. It's a really good thing.
Yeah.
There you are on stage being competitive every night in a beautiful way.
Don't you think Jules's later in the round is possibly one of the greatest ideas for a music show? Because this, how to get bands to do their best performances is just put them across from another band.
Yeah.
And have them and go like, oh, you think so? All right, really? Here, what about this? You know, that sort of thing.
I know that feeling very well because I had a solo record came out 10 years ago, whenever it was, and I was lucky enough to get on Jules's show and sing for the first time on my own without Squeeze. And I was stood in front of Robert Plant. I buckled. I was so nervous. You know, it was like, oh no, Robert, can you look away while I sing, please?
You might as well have been standing next to him at a urinal. And he pulls old Percy out and you're like, that, oh, for fuck's sake. You're getting it all over my trousers, mate.
What was it like when Neil had that injury? It must have been really hard for everybody.
Oh, yeah. That was like existential.
Yeah.
We were in France doing a gig. Something was brewing, though, you know. It was just, as you know, when things are getting successful and going wild, things get a little bit, it's like your little Cessna that you all get in is getting higher and higher and higher and higher. And the pressure's getting greater. Bits are beginning to fly off your little tiny aircraft. And, when that happened, it's weird. We were booked to do, we needed a break. We were like, to our manager, like, we need a break. I would have gone on forever, but the band were like, we're fucked. This was like October 2001. And we had like November, December off, and then he's like, okay, we've got four offers for shows. And he there was four envelopes, this pure pantomime. And it was Virgin, somewhere in Iceland, a gig in France, and it was three shows. We said yes to everything. The Virgin one was like huge at the end of summer. It was going to be great. We did the Iceland one where it was crazy and brilliant. And then we went to France and everyone got drunk. I went to bed because I can't sing. So I would just go to bed and they all sat up by the pool. Someone threw their pint into the pool, the pint glass.
And he chased it.
You remember the black brick that you would swim down and get? It was like that. It was And Neil's a great swimmer. And he dived in to the wrong end of the pool and smashed all his thing up. And he had the same injury as Christopher Reeves.
Yeah.
And this is where the magic and luck and all that stuff, it comes into it. And you sort of go, wow, there's something else going on here.
Mm.
So Neil, they dragged him out of the pool. Our keyboard tech was a trained nurse.
Hmm.
Just happened to be there as well and brought him back to life. Mm. And this is just traumatizing for a whole... I wasn't even there. I didn't even see it. I was told all this after the fact. And Neil, like, spluttered out of the water and they kept him still. He was airlifted to a hospital 100 kilometers away. At that hospital, there was a surgeon who had pioneered a new procedure for exact injury that Neil had sustained.
Extraordinary.
And was able to save his entire life.
Wow.
Or he would have been in a wheelchair like Christopher Reeves.
Wow.
And so that was in June, maybe, that happened, or July. By October, Neil was back behind the kit and we were recording our fourth record.
No way.
Yeah, Neil's...
Oh, my God.
I was like, that's maybe a bit too soon, but Neil is like, as you know, the drummers are a certain type.
Yeah.
They're hard as nails. Neil's like, nobody's going to stop me from doing this. And he just came back. And I mean, he still suffers from pain every day from it. But he's a trooper. So then he gets better. And yeah. he was like, he's racing cars and everything, but doing like 24-hour endurance Le Mans and all that sort of stuff. He started doing all that, and I'm like, are you mad? Are you crazy? And I think if you're in a band, I think we're all a bit crazy. You know?
We are indeed. You know, you're out on tour with the Killers, new record and loads of new songs and a bright and big smile on your face. Things must be good.
I feel good. I feel really, really great. And I feel great because, like I said before, last few years have been mental.
Yeah.
Just mates dying, separating from my wife and I separating, which is all cool, but it's hard on your heart.
Of course it is.
And my kid Clay as well, and he got bullied by a teacher at school, and we were trying to deal with all of that. And I think that weirdly, right up until, I swear to God, 2 days before I got on the plane to come to this, everything just like leveled out. And I feel like in life, the book of your life, like a page turned. And I feel like I'm in this nice, everything's great now. Everything's feels normal. And it'll last a while. And then it'll hopefully go crazy again.
Well, as long as you stay away from Camden, it'll be wonderful. So look after yourself, yeah. Fran, and thank you so much for your time. It's a real gift to speak to you, and perhaps I'll see you in LA on the next tour and we can hang out a little bit longer, go for coffee or something.
That would be amazing, because I'd
love to
melt your face off with questions. I mean, I really am. I'm our band, love your band. I told you that night, we just love you. I think you two are just
thank you. Okay, let's cool, keep man. In touch and we'll see you soon. God bless you, man.
Bye.
See you soon. Well, that was wonderful talking to Fran, and I can't wait to be in conversation with him again when I see him in Los Angeles on tour. And thank you for making this bonus episode a brilliant one. And I'll see you in Series 5, whenever that might be. To find out more about the wonderful work Help Musicians do, have a look at their website for loads more information. And please subscribe to this podcast. Thank you once again for listening. Please keep coming back. I Never Thought It Would Happen is a Gimme Sugar production for Help Musicians.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.